Today is November 20th, 2013, and this is episode number 231 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, a man barely alive. Hold on a second. Let me jump over here to the other side of the studio. I'm so big and strong, or I don't know, whatever. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, as ridiculous as we are, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at ACM@macobserver.com.
Brian, will you bend this pipe for me?
Yes, I will. Ready?
Yes.
Wow. And there you go.
That's swell. Thanks. Should I just do the outro now and we cut our losses?
No.
Yeah, we should probably talk about stuff, huh?
Yeah. Yes, in fact, let's talk about...
About your new bionic implants.
No. Oh. Let's talk about PrimeSense.
I still want to talk about your bionic implants, but okay, let's talk about PrimeSense.
Why don't you give us the news, first of all?
All right, so the news part is PrimeSense is a company that Apple is apparently about to finish purchasing.
This has been going on for a while, in other words.
Yeah. We talked about this at the Mac Observer a few months ago. And what makes this acquisition interesting is that PrimeSense is the company that developed the motion tracking technology that Microsoft initially licensed for the Xbox Kinect. Microsoft has since moved on to using their own technology for motion tracking. But that's where they started, is with PrimeSense. The other...
And Kinect is the Xbox feature that senses movements and interpolates that movement as gaming input, so that you can game by, you know, waving your arms around and jumping up and down and things like that.
This is what lets you play Dance Dance Revolution on your Xbox.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. The other thing that PrimeSense does, which a lot of people actually don't realize, they have some really talented engineers that are designing very small footprint, low energy consumption chips for mobile devices. So this
that's not important. What is important is that Apple is going to be making a gaming console, and it's gonna have a Kinect ripoff, and they're gonna be competing with the Xbox, right?
And it'll be a television.
I do still think Apple's gonna do a television, but that's let's not go off on that tangent yet.
Fine, whatever.
Clearly, that's not really what either one of us thinks.
Right. So here's where... Okay, so a lot of people actually are thinking this is all about the motion tracking. And they're kind of hung up there. And I think that's part of it. I think that there's a bigger picture here that's actually much smaller. And I think that this is a really cool path for Apple into wearable technology.
Well, let me hone that a little bit. A lot of people have been talking about this rumored or potential or actual acquisition from the standpoint of what it might mean for Apple TV, right?
Yes.
The mistake there is in framing PrimeSense around the Xbox. And in reality, there's a lot of things that can be done with motion detection that has nothing to do with a living room or television.
Right.
And so to sort of pigeonhole this as this is what Apple, Steve was talking about when, you know, he cracked the code for how to to how to do a television interface, a connected television interface, you know, or that you know, the Apple's going to be using gestures to control its TV. That's admittedly, Apple could be doing that, but I don't think that that's. I think that that's misdirecting the conversation.
I think it's a very myopic view of the conversation.
Yeah.
And yes, I think that this is the big play into wearable tech. First, Apple gets a bunch of really talented engineers. Second, they get engineers that know how to make small, low-power chips. Third, they get engineers that understand how to use motion tracking for interface design.
Right.
So picture this. We'll just use the iWatch as an example in my little scenario here, simply because everyone thinks that Apple's going to be making a watch. And if they're making a watch, it's going to have a small face on it because they're not going to make a Galaxy Gear. So,
if they make a Galaxy Gear, it'll have a bigger interface and be smaller.
Yes. Now, how do you make that interface revolutionary and to be able to do so much more in such a small space? And I think the answer is motion tracking.
Yeah, to be able to predict predict intent based on movement would be huge.
How about tracking your eyes to see exactly what it is you're looking at on the display so it can react?
That too.
And we've seen a little bit of that because Samsung actually is using some motion tracking technology today. They're not using it effectively, I think, but it is out there.
Correct. Yeah. This would be one of the many things that Apple didn't invent when it brought to market, but rather perfected before it brought to market.
Right.
By the way, I saw yesterday for the very first time, held and saw a Galaxy Gear in person.
I saw one a couple weeks ago, and before I say anything, I will ask, what did you think?
It's a piece of crap.
You are far kinder than I am, sir.
Well, it took me a little while to find my words, but it is. I cannot believe how big that thing is, and how little of that bigness is usable. It's a tiny screen for such a big device, and it was slow to respond.
It's ugly.
The interface is unintuitive. One of my favorite things was to leave an app. You push the home button, and that takes you home. So if you want to go find a, you have to go scrolling all the way from the beginning every single time you want to change whatever your thing. It's not even a half-assed product. It's not even.
No, it is so bad, and my experience playing with it was so painful that I came to the conclusion that if I was running Samsung and the design team walked into my office with this and said it's ready to go, and they showed me the Galaxy Gear, I would look at it, drop it in the trash, and say, you're fired, all of you, now.
Yeah.
But then again, I'm a jerk.
Did you saw the piece I wrote up on low Galaxy Gear sales?
Yes.
And there was a report from Business Korea saying that Samsung had sold fewer than 50,000 of them. And I think that story was limited to Korea. And then there was a report from Reuters that Samsung claimed to have sold 800,000, but with some pushing, it turns out that's just how many they shipped.
And that's a huge difference between selling and shipping.
Yes.
And if they shipped that many and sold 50,000
or a couple hundred thousand, whatever.
Yeah.
They could sell all 800,000. That thing is still a failure.
It is.
But the reality is
they didn't sell that many. My guess, and of course, because I'm all knowing, I can say this with conviction and authority, 150,000 worldwide.
And yes, that works for me.
And even if it's 200,000, okay, that's what, a third of what they produced.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, the there was that executive who was like, well, you know, I look at this thing as, you know, I like to think of it as like a tomato.
You're fired.
And when you've got a small green tomato, you know, you don't criticize it for being a small green tomato. You instead you nurture it so that it becomes a ripe tomato.
Take your god tomato and get out of my office. You're fired.
Yeah. In a nutshell, it was a fascinating. A fascinating comment. It's just really defensive, and just the notion that that everyone should be encouraging the Galaxy Gear because it's going to blossom into something special is, I mean, you know what? That's a difference between Apple and almost every other company.
Yeah, I have a better idea. You're right. That is the difference. So I have a better idea of how Samsung could have handled this. Instead of shipping this technological abomination, mm-hmm. why didn't they nurture it, care for it, and grow it into a quality product and then ship it?
Well, and of course, we know the reason to that. The reason to that is that Samsung has a massive inferiority complex when it comes to Apple. And Samsung wanted to get this on the market so that they could claim to be first. They could beat Apple to market for something.
Yeah, well, that's it. That's totally it. And it didn't – okay, so their goal was not to get a quality product out onto the market. Their goal was to beat Apple at releasing a rumored product.
Yes.
I kind of hope Apple never releases a watch and that all of this was just some elaborate scheme – in the Apple executive offices, and Samsung shipped the watch. Tim Cook and Phil Schiller, as soon as it shipped, sat back and laughed and laughed, and then Tim had to hand Phil a $5 bill for their bet.
I would rather Apple release something that actually does it right and was a hit.
Well, Apple will release something that turns out much better than the Galaxy Gear, whether it's a watch or
they're doing something in wearables.
Oh, they're absolutely doing something in wearables. I just don't know what part of our body it goes on yet.
Right. The wrist. 100%. 100% the wrist. Tim Cook, very interested in wrist. I think the wrist is of great interest.
It's definitely not going to be glasses.
No, it will not be glasses.
No, it won't.
It will not be glasses. So the question is, when it comes to PrimeSense, question is, where is Apple going to do it? And I think that the couching this purchase, again, in terms of the living room, is thinking way inside the box. And that this purchase has a lot more to do with something else, probably wearables, possibly iPhone, and the living room way down the line.
Sure. Yeah, there's no reason to expect that this technology will be limited to one part of Apple's product line.
Yes. But, right. But the living room is the last thing that I mean, it's definitely last in line for me. Well, I don't know, maybe Max.
Sure.
I think this is about smartphones and tablets and wearables, and it's not about the living room.
I don't think it's about the living room either. Sure, at some point it may spill over into that, but this is about what goes on our body, not in our living room.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I agree. So now we're going to do three rapid fires, like sort of pseudo normal. But one of those is going to be a little bit longer. So why don't we kind of move on to that topic?
All right. I think that sounds absolutely awesome. And okay, so what do we have
the
first?
That was the iPhone rumor.
I was looking at my list trying to figure out what do we start with. But we have two things to talk about together, really, that are both cool.
Well, we were going to focus on that. Now, pardon us, folks, while we work out the show. We'll have to sort it out in a second, so just give us a second.
I thought it was the interns' jobs to make sure we sounded like we knew what we were doing.
No. Oh, my God. Who wants them in charge of that? You know how bad we sound as it is. Why would we want to put them in charge?
Do you really think it would be any worse?
Yes. Yes, I do. Yes, I'm looking at you, Sierra.
Oh, my God. The puppy dog eyes. I can't believe Sienna pulled the puppy dog eyes on us.
You should really learn his name, Sierra.
Yeah, whatever.
Anyway, yeah. So the thing that we were going to talk about was actually the rumor is that Apple's going to be doing an iPhone 6 come mid-year, and this the latest version of this rumor. We've seen several versions of this rumor, and the latest version is coming from an analyst. Right. And the thing that we were going to talk about is rapid fire, which is escalating out of control, is his reasoning for why Apple was going to do this.
Now, see, this is where I would assume that the interns had put all this together, because the reasoning is so intern. And so he thinks that Apple is going to make a 6-inch iPhone because Apple needs to do that so that they can try and compete with Samsung again. Because Samsung has bigger iPhones, therefore Apple... Wow. I just totally did what I heard someone do in the coffee shop yesterday. Someone asked... The two people were in the coffee shop. One said, hey, do you want to see my new Galaxy iPhone?
Huh.
Yeah.
That's funny. So go ahead.
So anyhow, the idea is that Samsung is making smartphones that have larger displays. Therefore, they are winning, and Apple must release a smartphone with a larger display if they want to compete. And the implication being, Apple is currently not able to sell and compete in the smartphone market.
Right. And I tell you, I'm fascinated because we've seen this rumor. Okay. First of all, I believe that there's fire behind the smoke. I believe that we are approaching a critical mass to the rumor saying that Apple is going to release a larger iPhone, an iFablet.
You did that on purpose.
Well, yes, with great aplomb and gravitas.
You know, every time you use that term, I end up having to punch an intern. And then I feel bad, and this is all your fault.
That explains some things.
Yeah.
It explains anyway, bruises. So that Apple is going to Apple is going to be releasing some sort of, you know, 5-inch or maybe 6-inch iPhone in the middle of the year, outside of the normal iPhone upgrade cycle. And we're seeing more and more of this. I think that there's some fire behind this particular smoke. I think that Apple is working on this. And to me, it is perfectly in keeping with comments that Tim Cook made about trade-offs in the large screens that are being used in the current phablet markets on the Android side. And that until they could overcome those problems, that Apple wasn't going to release a mediocre product, right?
Right.
Doing so in the middle of next year, or sometime in the first half of next year, that to me is perfectly in keeping with what Tim Cook has told us. But this reasoning that Apple has to do it because they can't compete doesn't make any sense to me when the iPhone outsells all of the phablet devices that are out there.
It does outsell all of the oversized phone mini tablet devices that are out there.
Yes.
And yeah. Okay. So I have some problems with a bigger screen iPhone. And the first is, one of the things that Apple has always touted is that you can use the iPhone with one hand. If you go much bigger than the screen on the iPhone 5S, it is not a one-handed device anymore.
That's true. I think that part of the smoke that we're seeing, right? One of the rumors that we're seeing is that Apple is going to achieve this with a curved device, but in the same vein as the Galaxy Round that Samsung introduced, another product that I think that Samsung rushed to market in an effort to be first before Apple.
And luckily, the Round came out only in Korea.
Yeah, only in Korea, yeah.
Where it didn't sell. So it only failed in one market instead of around the world.
Correct. And that is something that Apple could do. But so here's the reality. I'm not saying that there's not demand for a large iPhone. I think we both know that there is demand for larger phones because they do sell well. They are the breakout hit of the Android market.
And I am completely baffled by that. And apparently, I use my iPhone in a completely different way than most people use their smartphones because it has to be a one-handed device for me. If I need to use two hands consistently for a task, then I'm reaching for my iPad Mini or my iPad Air.
Likewise, I could counter that. I'm completely in your camp here, but I could counter that with the notion some people don't want to carry two devices. If they can carry one device and have it be a little bit of a compromise, they will do so. That's a perfectly reasonable choice. I understand that some people want devices as big as the Galaxy S4, the Galaxy S3, even the Galaxy Notes, the HTC Ones, all of that business. There is demand for these larger products. So in no way am I saying that there's no demand for it, but what I am extending that, therefore, Apple is losing potential market share by not addressing the demand that is there for this product. But to say that Apple can't compete with Samsung, that's the ridiculous part, because Apple's iPhone outsells these large devices.
Right. Apple is doing just fine. It's Samsung that's trying to compete with Apple.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, the original large devices were an attempt to differentiate themselves from the iPhone. And so I don't believe that Apple wants to leave those sales on the table. I do believe that Apple is going to want to address this market. And there you have it.
Yeah.
There you have it. All right. Well, I guess that bell means that our extended round one of Rapid Fire is over.
I think this term Rapid Fire doesn't mean what we think it means.
And Ego Montoya would agree. Little Bits.
Oh my God, Little Bits. That is so cool. That was such an awesome find on your part.
Thank you. It was. And it was such an awesome description that you came up with.
It takes a village.
It does take a village. And one of us has got to be the idiot. And
and that's why we have Sebulba sitting over there in the corner.
Oh, he doesn't mean that, Sierra.
He means that.
You called it. I was giving you the opportunity to say what you came up with.
I called them Lego for electronics.
Yes. It's a brilliant description. A really, really accurate description. So these are little circuits, buttons, switches, lights, motors, etc. that fit together with magnets. So you can make something. You can make basically a circuit board of sorts by attaching things in the right order, and they fit together with magnets. So you can take them apart and put it back together again, make something else, invent whatever the heck you want to invent. And it's cool. It's just cool.
It really is cool. I love the idea of having these modular components that just click together magnetically to make electronic devices.
Yes. And one of the thing that I saw their new synth kit. And basically it's a bunch of circuits and buttons for activating them that you can string together to make different synthesizer type sounds. And so I just think that's really cool. I want to get like a whole bunch of those and then make my own little modified guitar pedal. That's what I want to do. I don't know if I could even do that with those things because I'm not very electronically oriented. But
I think you should totally try.
I should. They're a little bit expensive. The synth kit is $99. I think some of their starter kits are $69. So, you know, these are, you know, not, this isn't a $20 throwaway present for yourself for Christmas. But I tell you what, man, if I was buying a present for a kid that was intellectually curious, I would absolutely do everything that I could to get them one of the little bit kits. They've got all these instructions online. So if you don't want to figure out what to invent yourself, you know, you can follow the sort of blueprints, the instructions that they've got for making things that other people have already come up with.
Oh, that's awesome. And yeah, it's really what cool. A great way to learn, because as you're seeing how other people are putting the components together, it will hopefully inspire you to find your own ways to build on what they've done to make more interesting designs.
Right. And I think that you can upload or submit your instructions for building stuff too. And they've got all sorts of videos of stuff that people have already done and stuff that they've done themselves. It's just a cool product. We've got the link in the show notes. It's Little Bits. It's just cool.
All right. So speaking of cool, what's this other cool thing you found?
Dave found this one. Wait, who found this one? I found this one too. I found this one.
Yeah,
Dave,
you found both of these.
The nano dots. Am I getting that right?
Yep.
Now I've completely forgotten.
Nanodots,
gyro. I've been writing about nanobots. Nanodots, gyro, right. Okay, so the original nanodot, these are basically small magnetic gyroscopes. The original ones were smallish, and there was some concern about small kids swallowing them, that sort of thing. So they came up with a larger package.
So now they can swallow bigger things. But the awesome thing is, once they've swallowed them, you can stick kids together.
That's true. Keep them from getting lost, which is great. Good news and everything. Anyway,
it's probably a good thing that I'm not a parent, isn't it?
It probably is. It probably is. But we, you know, let's move along. these are really cool. You can get as many of them as you want. You can put them in, you know, strings. You can make all kinds of really cool shapes. You can have them interacting with other things, and they all just snap together with magnets, kind of sort of similar to the Little Bits, and it's really cool.
It's very cool. I think you just added to some people's holiday gift buying lists with these.
Indeed.
In a very cool way.
If anyone needs my shipping address, just let me know.
Yeah, Brian.
See how helpful I am?
Brian needs some fun presents. So you guys know what to do.
Just kidding.
Clearly, Sancho over there is not buying you presents. What horrible interns.
If he buys you a present, I would watch out. That's what I'm saying.
Well, if he buys me a present, I'm going to have Ainsley open it for me.
Yeah, fair. That's probably for the best.
Yeah.
That's probably for the best. All right. So that's rapid fire. Thank you for today. And let's move on to the other. This is the thing I'm most excited about.
Really? What are you excited about, Brian? Please tell me.
Coin and not Bitcoins again.
Although, if there's a way to tie Bitcoin in,
I bet I could find one.
I bet you can.
Yeah, so let's work on that.
Okay.
But in the meanwhile, Coin is a credit card of sorts. It's almost like a programmable credit card.
It is a programmable credit card, really.
Well, programmable.
It's a programmable credit card size device.
Yeah. It's the size and shape of a credit card, although I believe, of course, on one end that's going to be thicker. It's got to be. And you can use it along with your iPhone and a credit card reader.
Why does it have to be thicker on one end?
Because it still has to be thin enough to fit in credit card swipers,
mm-hmm.
Which means one half of it has to be as thin as a credit card. The other half has got to be thick enough for not only a display, but for memory and power, too. And I don't think they're fitting that into a credit card size thing. So I think that half of it's going to be thicker than the side with the swipe.
All right. I'll let your logic slide this time.
Yeah, do you actually have a problem with that?
No, I'm just giving you a hard time.
Okay. All right. So this thing, it stores multiple credit cards on one device. So rather than having a purse or a billfold or a wallet full of credit cards, you can have the coin. And you can have up to 8 credit cards stored on this thing and choose via a display that's on the device which one you're using, swipe it, and you're good to go.
You know what? I'm starting to have a problem with it being thicker on one side.
Why?
Because in the video showing this thing,
yeah,
they show it from several angles.
They never show it from the side.
But they show it not straight on from the side, but at angles. And the way the light plays on that thing, it sure doesn't look like it's thinner on one side and thicker on the other. That said,
well,
I think you're right. I don't think we have the technology to make something that does all of that with a display that is no thicker than a credit card.
Yeah, and the thing is that the side with the magnetic stripe has to be as thin as a regular credit card.
Right, because it has to go through a credit card reader.
Right, yeah. There is no way around that.
Well, actually, now we have another problem. How can you use this in a gas pump card reader where your card goes all the way in and comes all the way out?
Ooh.
Or how about in an ATM where you need to slide your card in?
Good question. I don't know. There's lots of – it's funny. So what Dave Hamilton is the one who found this, and he wrote up a cool stuff found for us. And he wrote it up from the standpoint of what was interesting to him were the counter indicators of all the people who could see nothing but problems with this thing. You know, like we're doing right now.
Yeah. And
because I've also got some questions about it.
I have questions, but my questions are not being couched in the sense that this is going to fail, therefore I'm posing questions to tell you why. They're questions that I'm genuinely interested to hear the answers because I think this is really cool and I would love to have one.
Right. Likewise. And there are lots of people, though, who have actually been questioning it from the standpoint of it'll never work and that it's doomed to failure and that there are security problems with it, there's just all kinds of reasons for it to fail. And Dave sort of seized upon that as a counterindicator of the fact that this thing is going to be disruptive. Because there's just too many people who were upset by it, and I think there's a lot of merit to his thought process that he's there. Even though I also share some concerns about how it's going to work, but that didn't stop me from putting $55 down to get one.
Yeah, you know, the price is pretty nice.
Well, that's the pre-order price.
Yeah, that's the pre-order price. So $55
until first quarter,
and you can get. By referring people in to buy them, you can get $50 back ultimately.
Yeah, $5 back per referral with a maximum of 10.
Right. So ultimately,
and again, that's an introductory thing. So what they're doing, they're kind of doing Kickstarter, but without Kickstarter,
which is clever. And you know, the big security concern that people have been bringing up so far is the thing about, well, now all your credit cards in one place and someone can steal all that info. And I'm thinking, if someone pickpockets you, they've got all your credit cards anyhow. And the concern about what happens if someone walks off with this, what do you do every time you're in a sit-down restaurant? Someone walks off with your credit card.
Yeah, and they could be doing anything behind that counter or in the kitchen.
Right. And
now, admittedly, if there's lots of people around, there's less that they're likely to attempt to do. But with any credit card, there is a security risk when it leaves your hands.
Right. And yet, credit cards are not secure. And anyone that thinks that they have a credit card that's really secure either doesn't understand how the whole system works or chooses not to believe it. And I'm not saying that to be harsh, really, I think most people don't get how not secure their credit cards really are.
Yeah, I think that's probably reasonable. But I think that I've got a pretty good grasp on security, and it's not something that I worry about on a day-to-day basis in that I try to be careful all the time.
Sure. Yeah, and I try to be careful all the time as well. I know many people that will not use even a reputable online retailer like Amazon because they don't know what's happening with their credit card and anyone could get a hold of it. And yet they will call some company that they find in the back of a magazine, read their credit card number and security code to someone on the other end of the line without any idea of where that card number is going.
Right. Right, which is definitely...
Yeah.
That's
so anyhow, I think that while there's always legit security concerns, I think that most of the security concerns that people have about Coin are based on either lack of information or maybe flawed logic.
Well, most – I don't know. I know that some of the wonks, some of the nerdier nerds were concerned about some of the technical aspects of the way it was handling security. I don't feel qualified to discuss those particular issues. But I do have a security concern about this device.
And I think you have a very legit security concern, and it's one that I had not thought of until you brought it up.
That security concern is this. So you go to a restaurant. You pay for your dinner.
With a regular credit card.
With a regular credit card. And it would be trivial for – and this has actually happened where bad guy waiters would attach a magnetic reader or, you know, keep a magnetic reader in their pocket and swipe the card into that so they can steal all your information and then charge the meal normally, right? But they end up keeping your data, your credit card information on their whatever they were using with the magnetic reader, right? That's been a risk for a long time. It's happened for a long time. And then once they have that number and information, then those credit card numbers can be sold. And, there's a thriving black market for stolen and fraudulently generated credit card numbers.
Right. Now, what if you had
where you can buy like a million of them for fractions of a penny apiece.
Right. So what if you have a really simple system that's inexpensive that allows you to steal 8 credit cards at a time?
Yeah, that's the thing about this. So turning that credit card data that you have swiped, you're an evil waiter, and you have swiped someone's card in your little magnetic reader, and you've stolen their credit card information, turning that into money, there's a certain barrier to entry to that. They either need to sell it to the black market, or they need to go charge things themselves, be it online, or be it producing a forged credit card.
And my guess is that because it's the easiest path, that if someone is going to try and commit credit card fraud with this sort of a system, it would be for personal gain, meaning they would go to stores and use your credit card to buy stuff in those stores for themselves, for friends.
Well, those numbers that get sold on these black market exchanges, those come from somewhere.
For that part, you don't need any of this. All you need to do is take photographs of credit cards.
But that's true. That's true. So there's a barrier to entry to all of these various ways of doing these things that sort of limit the activity to serious people.
Right. And yeah, so the serious criminals, it doesn't matter if this is on the market or not.
Right. Right. This is going to be irrelevant to them. So the concern that I had when Jeff and I were talking before the show was the fact that this lowers the the barrier to entry for the casual bad guys. So now I'm an evil waiter, and I target the customer. I rationalize my hate and anger to the customer who's really rude to me, or says something nasty, or is in some other way an unpleasant customer. And so I'm going to get back at them. I'm going to steal their credit card. So now I can take the coin that I've bought. I can take the card reader that comes with the coin, and I can take the iPhone app that I use to power the coin. And I can make a copy of that credit card that I can then use for some casual theft.
Sure.
It's a dramatically lower barrier to entry that sitting right here in the recording studio with Jeff, I don't see how Coin can prevent.
My guess, if they can prevent it, is that in the demonstration video they showed us, they didn't go into all of the details about the security system. They give a very nice overview of here's how it works, and here are a couple safety concerns that we will tell you about right now. Like it pairs to your iPhone.
Yeah, with Bluetooth.
So when your iPhone is out of range of Coin, you get an alert on your iPhone telling you that, which is a great way to remind you if you forgot to get your credit card back from the waiter.
Or someone runs off with it.
Yes, or someone runs off with it. And because once it's out of range of your iPhone, it no longer works.
You know, and we kind of did a bad job of setting up how this thing even works. So you have your iPhone. You've got a little reader very similar to the Square reader. Matter of fact, it might be the exact same.
It looked a little different, but it was very similar to the Square reader.
You take your credit card. You swipe your credit card through this reader that comes with your coin. Your iPhone then has the data. Your iPhone app, this particular app from Coin, has your credit card information.
Right, and you have to take a photograph of the credit card right after you swipe it. So you're swiping it into your iPhone.
Yeah, you can take a photograph. I don't think you have to. That was just for identity, for like quick identification.
I just assumed when they said, first you swipe it, then you take a photograph, that it was like that was a requirement. But maybe, yeah. The point is we don't know enough yet other than this is really cool.
Right. So then you can use that app to offload the swiped information to your coin. And that's how you can put up to 8 credit cards on it. And you can actually store additional credit cards on your iPhone so that if you're carrying your reader with you too, you could switch them out. You know, if you're one of those people that has 20 credit cards, you could swap them out on the fly if you wanted to.
Right.
And that's how you end up encoding all this stuff. And that's the part that's really cool, because now you got one credit card instead of 8 or instead of 20.
Right. And your physical credit cards, assuming that you can actually put the coin into any type of credit card reader, you can just leave those behind.
Right, exactly. And, yeah, that's really the compelling part
for me.
Right. So it does have a lot of questions about it still. They're taking pre-orders, like we said. They're not shipping until sometime in the first quarter, I think, is what they said, of 2014. We don't know when that'll be. So, you know, like I said, it's kind of like Kickstarter, but without Kickstarter. And it's super exciting, and it's really cool. And more importantly, what comes after it from both Coin and from competitors is going to be even cooler.
Right. Yeah. This is the door opening to a new way of dealing with digital payments or credit card payments.
Very much so, because you know you could put debit cards on this. Mm-hmm. You could put. In some ways, this could be kind of a competitor to Apple's eventual payment processing ideas. Because you could put like gift cards on it. You could put discount cards. There's no end to the different kinds of cards you could put on it. And you would assume that Coin too. I'm just coming up with a name there. Would store 100 instead of 8, or 20,
right?
Or 40 instead of 8, right? And so, you know, you can put all of those cards that you normally carry around with you. You can put them on this one single device, carry it with you. It's pretty cool.
It's very cool, and it's very compelling, and I think it's also really exciting. Now, I mentioned electronic payments, and as soon as I said that, my first thought was, what a wonderful way to get you to talk about how something like this could make Bitcoin a more mainstream currency.
Well, it's funny you say that.
I know. I'm sitting here laughing.
We talked about Bitcoin. I'm not going to turn this into a huge long discussion of Bitcoin, but we talked about Bitcoins last week, where I sort of explained what they are.
Right. So if you want a primer on Bitcoin, just go ahead and listen to last week's show, and
or read the primer that we also published.
Yeah, and then just hop back here. Don't worry, we'll wait. Okay, great. I'm glad you're back. Go ahead, Brian. Continue.
And there are more and more merchants around the world who are taking Bitcoin, but it's far from being anywhere close to universal, let alone even, or I should say, it's far from being mainstream, let alone universal. And the one thing that currently has to happen with Bitcoin is you've got to have a wallet address, a very long string of digits and letters. That represents an address that can receive or send bitcoins. And it occurred to me, again, while we were talking, that a product like Coin could be used to also load a Bitcoin wallet. And they're unrelated. Coin has nothing to do with Bitcoin. It's only a coincidence that they have Coin in the name.
Right.
And that you could use Coin to load a Bitcoin wallet so that you could pay at with a physical card at a store that accepts Bitcoins, and it would be a way for greatly easing this transition to what I assume will be the transition where Bitcoins are in fact a mainstream form of currency.
And when you mentioned that to me, that was suddenly very compelling, because the idea that you could use Bitcoin as a mainstream currency is really cool. And this is exactly the kind of product that would make it very easy to let the average consumer jump into the Bitcoin world.
How about a less nerdy?
Okay, consumer? Less nerdy. Okay, so it makes it easy for the less nerdy to jump into the Bitcoin world. Once you have the less nerdy in the Bitcoin world, then it becomes easier to figure out how to bring the non-nerdy consumer into this game as well.
Right. I agree with that. And approaching all of this from the standpoint of a programmable device is, to me, it's like, I can't believe that no one has tried this before. Actually, maybe they have, and I just didn't know it. But I mean, this to me, it just feels like such an incredibly logical leap that these guys at Coin have made, guys and girls at Coin have made, And I think it's fascinating, and I think that the idea of not carrying 20 credit cards, physical credit cards, with me is just glorious.
Oh, I love that idea. I mean, just one single card, that just sounds wonderful. And if it gets stolen and becomes useless because it's not with you anymore, you don't have to replace all your credit cards.
Right. Well, right. That is the flip side of it. You know, you lose Coin, you lose all your credit cards.
Well, temporarily.
Now you got to cancel them all.
Not if you lose your Coin, because it gets because it deactivates, because it's not with you.
Oh, does it?
Yeah. If it's
it doesn't just alert you; it actually deactivates.
Yeah. It has to be within range to function.
No, really?
Yeah, it's in the video.
Oh, that's genius. Yeah. I somehow missed that. I was all this excited about Coin. I didn't even realize that.
Well, there you go.
It has to be with your iPhone to use it. Which, of course, you know, it's got another set of problems, right? You know, don't leave your iPhone at home if you want to actually pay for the gas.
But you're not going to leave your iPhone at home anyhow, right? Right?
Well, so, yeah, some people
okay,
will.
If you're the kind of person that's going to buy into Coin when we don't even know if there's going to be retailers that will let you use it, you're the kind of person that's not leaving your iPhone at home.
That's at least, you know, true enough. True enough. All right. Well, that is really good. And of course, the flip side is that you can could someone hack the coin?
Well, there's ways to hack anything. So
yeah,
sure,
we don't know.
But but you know, that I don't think is as there shouldn't be nearly as much concern over that as there is over someone just taking your credit card and doing a crayon rubbing back in the kitchen before they swipe it.
Yeah, or taking a photograph of it with their smartphone, or swiping it with a little portable
reader. Yeah, there are plenty of low cost, incredibly easy ways to steal your credit card information that don't involve Coin.
Right. Right. Yeah. So it's really interesting. I can't wait to actually get it, and I hope that, you know, if it does even half of what it's supposed to do, it'll be really cool.
Yeah, I think it'll be really, really cool.
And we'll have a link to it, by the way, if you want to get in on this pre-order business. So that, because this $55 price is it half the retail price?
I believe that's half price.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be more. Whatever the percentage is, it's going to be more when it actually ships. So if you want to get in early, we've got the link in the show notes for you to go and order.
Right.
All right. Well, anything else you want to talk about today?
No, I just want to watch you bend this other pipe that I brought in.
All right, ready? Hold on.
Wow.
Ah, yeah, there you go.
That just never gets old.
Yeah, because you need bent pipes.
I do. I'm going to make holiday ornaments out of them. Very heavy holiday ornaments.
Very, very heavy holiday ornaments. Do you hear the dog barking in the...
I just assumed that was one of the interns.
It could be someone outside the studio.
Yeah. Man, we need to talk to our security team again.
Yes.
Yeah, yes. We do.
All right. Take us out.
Okie doke. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening, and feel free to follow me on Twitter or app.net. I'm JGam at both places. And hop on over to iTunes and give us a review on the show, because we love it when you do that.
We do indeed. And you can follow... Wait, you're on Twitter, right?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter and on app.net.
Did you say that?
I did.
Oh, God, I kind of...
I told everyone I'm Jay Gamut, both places.
I'm on Twitter, too. I'm TM O'Brien. That's with a Y. I'm at geektales.com. Jeff's at freshbrewtales.com. And our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by the also good people at Cashfly. The bass was recorded by the good people persons of Boom. And that was recorded just for us, and that's all for this week.
And stay subscribed, please.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.